morning and welcome to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Good morning to all of you joining us locally by radio and streaming online. We appreciate you tuning in. Today is Sunday, March 18th, 2018. A happy belated St. Patrick's Day and St. Gertrude's Day for anybody who's going to be celebrating those. I'm your host, Hertzy Hertz, and I'm here in studio with Maddie Love. And on the phone, we have our awesome guest, Jonathan Tweet, author and game designer. Jonathan Tweet is an atheist organizer in Seattle and a children's science communicator. His career is in geeky game design, which is, may not be exactly related to atheism, but I'm pretty sure we have a meetup group who's maybe heard of his name or maybe have played one of his games, probably meets on Thursdays at one of the local gaming shops. This is an open conversation, and we welcome and encourage listener interaction with your phone calls to 952-946-6205, your emails to radio@mnatheists.org, or tweet us at atheisttalk. The phone number is only available when we are live, but you can always email or tweet whether we're live or you're listening to this in podcast form. Maddie, Jonathan, good morning, and welcome to Atheist Talk.
Morning.
Thanks.
All right. Let me move over to the actual document we're going to use. So, Jonathan, you wrote a book called Grandmother Fish.
Yep.
What is this book about? I'm guessing it's about a fish?
Well, it's a trick because it seems like it's about a fish, but really it's about you. So, this is the
I'm a fish?
Storybook to teach evolution to preschoolers. And so Grandmother Fish is our ancestor that lived 400 million years ago. And this is a story that demonstrates to even really young children how we're all part of the animal family and that we descended from animals that don't look anything like us, really. Nice. So it's a child's first book of evolution.
And, of course, the next question is, why did you write this telling children that they're all fish?
Yeah. it's descendants of fish, but yeah. So when I had a daughter, a little preschool daughter, I wanted her to know where we all come from. I wanted her to have the same sort of story that kids in all cultures have always had, a story that tells them about their origins and where we fit into the world and what have you. And since I'm a science geek, I wanted it to be a true story about evolution, and I started writing that book about 20 years ago now, and I just felt like this book ought to exist. There ought to be an origin story for little kids that tells them the truth about where we come from.
I think that's an awesome idea.
Yeah, I was flipping through the book this morning, and it was like, oh, this is cute, because I liked how you broke it up between different animals.
Yeah.
I don't want to say getting more complex, because that's kind of like a lot of life is complex. But as we got closer and closer to things that people would identify as closer to human or whatever. I thought that was brilliant the way you did it. And then the end, how you bring
Thank
it all
you.
Together and you've got the whole tree and all the animals that we just looked at. It was that was beautiful.
Oh, yes.
It really did come together well. And the reason that I did the book on Kickstarter is that when I told people I was doing a kid's book on evolution, their eyes would light up. Mm. And so I figured, wow, I really have something here. I need to make it really happen.
Well, let's go back a little bit. So you and I were emailing and such, and you had this shared document. And you said it took you 15, 20 years to complete the book.
Yeah.
When did you know it was ready?
Yeah. So, I was a professional game designer, and so this was a side project, and I thought it was ready about 10 years in, and someone who's a book professional, children's book professional, sort of told me it wasn't ready, and so I just kept sort of noodling on it until finally in 2013 I had, I was literally soaking in the hot tub, and I had that eureka moment where I realized that what the book needed was to have the children imitate the sounds and the motions of our ancestors. And so originally the book was about, Grandmother Fish had a tail. Do you have a tail? And it sort of was about body parts. It's sort of a natural place to start. And then when I changed that to actions, you know, grandmother fish could wiggle and swim fast. Can you wiggle? Like that, then it became interactive in a way that it never had been before. And it was able to reach children at an even younger age. And so then I knew I had it. Okay, I finally have. After 15 years, I figured out how to do it. And I was going to do a cheap version, maybe a digital version, so I wouldn't even have to pay for printing and, you know, fund it out of my own money. But then when I told people about it, they were so excited about it that I thought it has to be a real thing. It has to be a real hardback book, you know, great art and what have you. And so I went the Kickstarter route to self-publish.
And who's the artist on that? Because that art is absolutely amazing.
Isn't that amazing? So I'm a game designer, so I have contacts. And Karen Lewis, she's local in, here in Seattle. She was a friend of a friend. Now she's a friend, obviously. But she is a children's science illustrator. And when she heard about this project, she knew she would be perfect for it. And she was. You know, she can make these animals look realistic enough that, like, a paleontologist can tell that grandmother fish is an ichthyocanthus or whatever. But it has sort of a cheeky smile and, you know, appeals to children. And so she can really make that balance. And she helped me with the words and the structure of the story. And she brought up the cute factor a lot. And
it is freaking adorable.
I mean, thank you. Yeah, it turned out so much better because she was working on the project. Like, I asked her to draw Grandmother Ape, and she drew Grandmother Ape plus a baby ape. Well, that's twice as good, four times as good, right? So, yeah, I'm very happy. She's the one that sort of twisted my arm about putting the evolutionary tree in the back, right? It's big, full-color, two-page spread of, like, the entire tree of life, simplified for kids. I didn't want to do it because I said it was going to be a ton of work. And she wanted to do it because she said kids would just love it. And we were both right. It was a ton of work. The kids really love it.
So are you guys ever thinking about maybe putting, like, together some grandmother fish toys?
So, you know, those options are, we're going to pursue them once the book sort of really takes off, I would say. Like, at this point, it's well-beloved in sort of the smaller circles of people who know about it, but there just aren't a lot of parents going to stores looking for evolution books for their kids yet.
Yeah.
So
marketing for something like this is one of those where it's like I don't think people necessarily know that they need/want this until all of a sudden it's put in front of them, and they're like, oh, because admittedly...
That's exactly right.
Oh, yeah, I have a nibbling... my sister's child. Yeah. And, you know, when I told her, I'm like, oh, by the way, I need you or your husband to read this to the nibbling. And it was like, oh, my God. After they were done, they're like, this book is awesome. I want this book.
I'm like, that's great. Yeah.
I'm like, that's great because
really
you get it.
To it. Yeah.
Well, growing up, I had I remember having a kid's Bible that was illustrated very much like this. And like my parents, just having it in the house and just reading it, I was exposed to these ideas. And I could see how having a book like this in the house, just kids reading it, they're seeing it, they're being exposed to the ideas. I mean, I know we shouldn't try to indoctrinate people, but at the same time, I think it is good to help give them a vaccination of truth.
I was going to say, and I think there's a major difference between indoctrinating them into something that doesn't have any provable...
Right. No,
it.
I agree.
And like, you know, having that science. I love the factor that you were talking about, how the illustrator actually put it so that these are the actual animals in the family tree. I'm like, that is so cool. I didn't even realize that because I'm not that science nerdy.
No, I mean, I'm a super science geek, so we went to a ton of trouble to get the science really right.
Awesome.
And I had to learn a lot of stuff about our past and our family tree and whatever in order to get it all correct.
So you said that you did this on Kickstarter. How did that work?
It turned out really well. We raised over $36,000 and we were able to fund, a modest print run of a self-published book. And the other thing about Kickstarter is by telling my friends and my colleagues and my contacts and whatever that I'm going to put this book on Kickstarter, it makes other people want to pitch in because they see that I'm putting myself up there and I'm taking this risk and I'm trying to make something happen. So I really wound up getting a ton of support and really good advice from writer friends and other, you know, creative friends. Like I said, as a game designer, I've got lots of creative people in my circle. And so I was able to get help from the National Center for Science Education and sort of all sorts of resources. People online were helping me with that family tree. And sort of because I was doing it in public, like it's here's this project that I'm trying to accomplish, it sort of inspired people to glom on and help, and it made the book way better than it would have been if I had just sort of worked on it on my own.
So I noticed that at the beginning, at the front cover and the back cover, there's all these names and such. Are each of those names of people who kickstarted?
Yes, those are our backers. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I wish I had seen this when you were doing it.
Right? Yeah.
Well, please stay with us through the break. We'll return to Atheist Talk with Maddie Love and Jonathan Tweet. I'm Hertzy Hertz, and you're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
This is Ken Hagland of Minnesota Hospice, inviting you to listen to our brand new show, airing on AM 950 on Saturdays from noon to 1. The Minnesota Hospice Show looks forward to discussing how we honor life and to exploring the physical, spiritual, mental, and emotional issues we experience throughout all stages of life. Learn how hospice is the new face of hope and how it's your benefit, your choice. Join us Saturdays at noon and check us out online at minnesotahospice.com.
And the first sentence of his email said, I'd like to stay anonymous. And the second sentence said, I'd like to donate $1 million to the Global Good Fund. Where should I send the check?
I'm Tony Lloyd, and I'm the host of the brand new show, Social Entrepreneur. If you love stories that engage, inform, and inspire, you don't want to miss it. Join us every Monday from 7 to 8 a.m. right here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Former Minnesota Governor Arnie Carlson has some strong opinions about the people who have followed him as governor. Monday on the Mike McEntee Show, I talk with him about Governor Mark Dayton's 8 years in office, as well as Tim Pawlenty, the man who is considering a run for his old job. Should Republicans welcome Pawlenty into the governor's race? Arnie Carlson talks about that and his ideas to fix our political system. That's Monday on the Mike McEntee Show from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. on AM 950 Radio.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe, and I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and Francine Dinah. If you've never been to Cucumbers, it's a buffet-style restaurant with a huge variety of salads, homemade soups, bakery items, and hot entrees that change daily and nightly, plus our always fresh fruit and delicious ice cream. We're open for lunch and dinner, but Sunday brunch is my favorite time at Cucumbers, with scrambled eggs, waffles, French toast, bacon, sausage, baked ham, chicken fajitas, brunch potatoes, warm gooey cinnamon rolls, and many other items to choose from. It's no wonder why Cucumbers has always been a popular Sunday destination. So whether you're looking to skip Mass, someplace to go after Mass, or just great food to maintain your Mass, Cucumbers is the answer to your prayers. Bring in your church bulletin or Minnesota Atheist newsletter and receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
Welcome back to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're tuned in to Atheist Talk, and I'm your host, Hertzie Hertz, in studio today with Maddie Love and our guest, Jonathan Tweet. Before we get back, however, I want to remind everyone listening live that immediately following this program, you can listen to American Atheist Viewpoint, an official production from American Atheists. Please note, you can always catch American Atheist Viewpoint by subscribing to the podcast version in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or the podcast player of your choice. As for the here and now, if you'd like to get involved in the conversation with Maddie Love this morning and Jonathan Tweet, you can call us at 952-946-6205, email us at radio@mnatheist.org, or tweet us at Atheist Talk, or join us on our Facebook page, Atheist Talk. Maddie, Jonathan, welcome back.
Thanks.
Thanks.
All right, so when we left off, we had just finished your Kickstarter. Done the self-publishing, and I've noticed now that you seem to have a professional publisher.
That's right, yeah. So we self-published in 2015, and then somebody wrote, Barbara J. King wrote a blog post on an NPR blog, or Cosmos and Culture blog, 13.7. And so she picked up some of the more sort of academic reviews that had occurred on the online, and she wrote a really nice article about how young should a child be when you start talking to them about evolution. And then that article went viral, and my little print run sold out. And so that was great. I wish I had printed twice as many. Based on the strength of that, an agent got in touch with us. We signed on with that agent. He sent our, complete manuscript with art and everything, the PDF, out to a bunch of publishers. And pretty soon we had three publishers all bidding for the rights. Ooh, and we went with Macmillan.
Wow. Was there a bidding war?
A little bit of a bidding war.
Oh, that must have felt good.
It's really nice when major publishers are coming to you, telling you how much they want your book. One publisher said it would be like a dream come true to publish that book because he wanted to do an evolution book for a long time. He could never figure out how to get it done.
Oh, that is so awesome. And like I said, my nibbling just absolutely adored it. I mean, he was doing all of the movements and crawling around the floor. It was so cute.
That's how their language started. It's a pantomime and mimicry and what have you. Like, that's very natural for little kids. So that mimicry stuff, like crawling like a reptile, it's just golden. It works way better than I ever even imagined.
So now, obviously, since this is a book aimed at children and has to do with evolution, I'm guessing that you have creationists who are giving you grief about this.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
I'm on social media. I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and so it's really easy for creationists to sort of get a hold of me and say mean things to me. I try not to respond to negativity with negativity, and so my go-to response is to tell these people that I support their First Amendment right to teach kids what they believe, and I expect them to support my constitutional right to teach kids what I believe. That puts them in a really real quandary because they, at least on paper, they respect the Constitution and America and whatever, and they don't like being told that they're violating the spirit of the First Amendment or what have you. That tends to deflate them a little bit.
I'm actually on your website right now looking at the religious meme that Grandmother Fish was incorporated into.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta see this.
They also did a video of me, me and PZ Myers. PZ Myers is another evolution promoter on with a big blog.
Oh yes, he's actually in Minnesota, and yeah. So we've had him as a guest before.
Yeah, he was one of the very first big boosters for Grandmother Fish. I really appreciate that. And he and I are working together at the Science Museum of Minnesota, helping them with their new evolution program.
You should just see we're both like, oh my God!
That's going to be cool.
I love going to the Science Museum, and now it's going to be even better because it's like, oh yeah, I totally know two people who helped with that.
Well, actually, we know three because it looks like Greg Layden also helped with
this book. Oh my God. Okay, so what we really need to do is we need to be in contact, and when this goes up, we can get Greg and PZ and you all in the same, relative room.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Oh, that is so awesome.
Yeah, Science Museum of Minnesota has some really ambitious plans for teaching evolution.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They looped me in because, obviously, Grandmother Fish shows that, you know, I've got a knack for figuring out how to take a complicated topic and make it accessible.
Yeah. Have you ever been to the Science Museum of Minnesota?
Well, so they had me out there
February.
And so, yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah. My favorite part is a permanent exhibit in there that has all the different quackery from over the place.
That's totally fun.
And I just love the factory because I know it's a little bit older, you know, for the kids who are a little bit older, but it does teach that, you know, when does something get too many promises? You know, how to critically think about that kind of stuff. Anyways, we got to get back to your book.
Okay.
I could totally talk about this, the Science Museum
forever. I have a question. Like, I'm looking at your website and I see all these different places I can order from: Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart. What place, like, so if I'm a fan and want to make sure you get the biggest cut of the little bit of money that I'm going to spend, what's the best place for people to order this book?
Yeah, so call around to all the friendly local bookstores. What, you have a Big Wild Rumpus? Is that did I get that name right?
That sounds familiar, maybe. No?
I live in the cities, and all my local bookstores are Barnes & Noble.
Well, isn't there a Red Balloon, though, on Grand?
Call around to any brick-and-mortar bookstore, ask if they have it, and, you know, buy it from some, you know, that is the best way for them to learn that people want this book. Mm-hmm. You know, call them up, ask for it, go buy it from there. That's the thing that's going to help us the most.
That's good advice.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, and actually, like, you know, tell those stores that, you know, if they start carrying it, they should post it on some social media spots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
The biggest thing that people can do to help me is to share posts on Twitter or Facebook. Grandmother Fish has a page on both of those, and that seems to be the most effective way to sort of help spread the word.
Is Grandmother Fish also kind of like Sue the T-Rex? Does she tweet?
You know, I tweet as the author of Grandmother Fish. I don't tweet as Grandmother Fish.
Okay, so. Okay. I can get that. I can see that. It's a little harder to tweet to three-year-olds.
Yeah. Also, fish are not as interesting as a T-Rex.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
A fish is not as interesting as a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Neither are puppies, and yet Paw Patrol is all my three-year-old grandson wants to watch.
Oh, yeah. It makes me glad that my nibbling lives out in Washington State, because then I don't have to listen to it all the time. So what's your favorite line that you've gotten from a creationist?
Favorite line I've gotten from a creationist, you know, the...
Sure, ask him a question right before we go to break. What a great question.
If nothing else, he can think about it while we're on break.
There you go.
All right. Well, with that, we'll return with Maddie Love and Jonathan Tweet right after the break. Stay with us. And I'm Hertzie Hertz, and you're listening to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, this is Gregory Rich from Habitation Furnishing and Design, and I'd like you to tune in to a new program, Drink in the Style. Sundays at 5 p.m., Drink in the Style is going to be a one-hour conversation about interior design and aesthetics, all while enjoying a cocktail created by a local mixologist. Drink in the Style, Sundays at 5 p.m., brought to you by Habitation Furnishing and Design.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug with Hidden Edges Radio on Sundays from 1 to 2 p.m. Join me this Sunday for my interview of Stephen Patton from the Public Health Department. Stephen has the unenviable job of tracking down people with sexually transmitted infections. In the process, he's learned a whole lot about humans working to survive the human condition. Quite fascinating, if you ask me. Hidden Edges Radio, challenging, passionate, perspective-changing on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
On March 24th, the kids and families of March for Our Lives will take to the streets of Washington, D.C. and throughout the country to demand that their lives and safety become a priority and that we end gun violence and mass shootings in our schools today. I'm Lori Fitz, host of Connections Radio Show, and we'll be supporting the March for Our Lives live on next Saturday morning. Join me for a conversation on the need for gun control and the vision of ending gun violence. 9 a.m. March 24th on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Atheists, secular humanists, and free thinkers, here you are listening to the Minnesota Atheists Talk Radio Show, Atheist Talk. We hope you are enjoying it. If having a frankly atheist perspective on the radio waves appeals to you, please consider making a contribution to our radio fund. Our contract came up for renewal, and we need your help if you want the program to stay on the air. That will make sure that you can continue to have opportunities to hear interesting speakers with non-religious perspectives, and you can call up and ask them questions too. Get the details on our website at minnesotaatheists.org, where you will find buttons to make it easy to make a secure donation through PayPal. Or, if you have a business and would like to reach an intelligent, progressive audience, please contact us through our website. That's minnesotaatheists.org. Or call us at 612-588-7031. If you are interested in us, we are interested in you.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Hunter Haas. Sunday, mostly cloudy with a high near 45. Monday, mostly cloudy with a high near 41. And Tuesday, chance of snow, cloudy with a high near 36. This week's EatLocalMinnesota.com restaurant of the week is Our Kitchen. Our Kitchen serves some of the most delicious comfort food around. Their family-owned diner-style restaurant has been located at 36 between Eldridge and Bryant for over 76 years. Find out more at EatLocalMinnesota.com.
Thank you for tuning in to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF. I'm your host, Hertzie Hertz, and in studio we have Maddie Love, and on the phone we have Jonathan Tweet, and I'd say we're having a fascinating conversation. But before we continue this conversation, which will be our final segment with Maddie and Jonathan, there's a bit of housekeeping I need to attend to. Atheist Talk is produced with the funding from Minnesota Atheists and Cucumbers Restaurant in Edina, Minnesota. Please consider visiting our sponsors, and if you do, let them know that you appreciate their support of Atheist Talk. If you'd like to advertise on the program and help keep us on the air, please contact us at radio@mnatheist.org. I also want to note our dedicated group of volunteers and the generous donations of you, our listeners. You help keep Atheist Talk on the air and in podcast form. I also want to note our donors of the week are Cindy, Eric, and August, and our new patrons, Carissa and Larry. Thank you so much. And if you're able to help with a donation, please consider doing so at our Radio Fund page or at our Patreon at www.patreon.com/atheisttalk. Minnesota Atheist is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization. We couldn't do this show without you, and we deeply appreciate your support. No, seriously. Very appreciative. Music for Minnesota Atheist is by composer and member Brent Michael Davis and is used with permission. Please note, all opinions are the guests and hosts only and do not necessarily reflect those of Minnesota Atheists as an organization. As always, check out the Minnesota Atheist website for podcasts of previous programs. You can browse articles, book reviews, and peruse the calendar for upcoming events, like Thursday nights at Fantasy Flight, where we do game night. You can sign up for Atheist Weekly email, which will give you a link to all the upcoming events. It's a great way to stay connected with the community. If you enjoy the show and all that Minnesota Atheists has to offer, please consider becoming a member of Minnesota Atheists while you're on the website. Membership has some great perks. Check out the website for how and what. With all this relevant and useful information out of the way, let's get back to our conversation with Maddie and Jonathan.
Hey.
Hello.
I've got an answer.
Woohoo!
For two answers. So the sort of my most of the creationists don't have anything interesting to say. You might be surprised to hear that. I did get Ken Ham to refer to me as aggressive.
Ooh.
And that was nice. But I think the best comment I got was from a creationist who said, there are already a million preschool books on evolution for kids. Why do we need another one?
Could this creationist name like one?
Yeah.
Besides
none.
Yours?
Yeah, there were like at some point I went and looked to see. I wanted to see what the other evolution books for preschoolers were like, so I could compare the book that I was working on. Well, there's no other preschool books for kids on evolution. I went to like the preschool science section in a bookstore. There's no preschool science section.
No. Dang it, Google, you have destroyed another argument. My arguments are my favorite arguments are the ones that can be disproven with a cursory Google search.
Right, exactly.
So at the beginning of the show, we noted that you are a game designer. And,
yeah.
And so what games have you designed?
So I work on tabletop games, so it's mostly role-playing games with, you know, pencils and dice and what have you. The most played game that I did was the third edition of Dungeons & Dragons back in 2000. I was the lead designer on that. And that game reinvigorated the Dungeons & Dragons brand and did a lot to reinvigorate, you know, role-playing games. And it's still, like, that version of Dungeons & Dragons that I was the lead on all those years ago is still being played pretty faithfully by people who play Pathfinder or people who just still use the old 3rd and 3.5 books.
Nice.
So that's my big thing in terms of commercial success and name recognition. I've done a bunch of role-playing games, and they're all very different from each other. And they so Ars Magica and Everway and Over the Edge, and they're very they sort of push story and they push character more than you see a lot of sort of their contemporaries. And in fact, the Over the Edge role-playing game from '92, that was a big sort of a big inspiration for a lot of people who are big names now in role-playing games, like Jason Morningstar and Vincent Baker and Ron Edwards. So that Over the Edge was like a labor of love project, sort of like Grandmother Fish was, and came at games from a different way, sort of like Grandmother Fish comes at evolution from a different way, and really had a big influence on people doing what are now called, you know, the indie role-playing games.
Nice. I might have to get the list of the other ones. I got Over the Edge. I am a role player. I did not I did a little bit of 3.5 and then admittedly did a lot of 4.0. I liked it. But now I'm at a 5th edition right now.
Okay, well, 13th Age is maybe something you should take a look at. It is a version of Dungeons & Dragons, basically, using the Open Game License. I wrote it with Rob Hainso. I was the lead designer on 3rd, and he was the lead designer on 4th. And 13th Age is our version of the game, what we would do if we didn't have corporate masters to be beholden to.
Oh, I will totally be taking a look at that.
So it's more story, more exciting combat, more creativity, and you can pull all sorts of good stuff out of it and drop it right into a 5th edition campaign.
Score. So you also mentioned at some, either on the show or in one of our earlier conversations, that you have a game in production about evolution.
That's right. It's called clades. And a clade is a complete branch of the evolutionary family tree. So this is a card game where players make matches of cards, 3 cards that go together, and one of the ways that they match those cards is according to their evolutionary relationships. So it just teaches kids how to sort of sort animals according to common descent, according to which ones have the most recent common ancestor.
So
it also teaches kids that reptiles and birds go together into one same group called the sauropsids.
Interesting. So Grandmother Fish is for, like, the 3-year-olds and such, and this might be more for, like, the 10-year-olds.
Well, this is ages 6 and above.
Oh, nice.
But you're competing against the other players to be the first to spot the matches of the cards that are on the table. So the older the other players are, the more difficult the game becomes. Like, it scales up pretty well. I know a middle school teacher of biology, and he said that Glades really elicited from the students, you know, these sort of deep questions that they wouldn't ask if they were just taking in the material passively. But because they're, you have to sort of understand how these animals relate in order to match them, it prompts all sorts of questions. And I've seen that too among people who are looking at the cards. Like, oh, what about bats? Are bats mammals? Yes, bats are mammals. That sort of thing. And also just like, you know, what's more related to what? And what have you, yeah.
This sounds like a cross between Go Fish and a game that we call Speed up here, or California Speed, where like you have to like.
And oh yeah.
I haven't played your game yet, but are you like competing? Like whoever can pick up the card the fastest is able to get it.
Yeah, so it's a lot like Set, where you have a bunch of cards laid out on the table, and the trick is to spot which of them go together into a match.
Okay.
And so you're never sitting around waiting for someone else to take their turn. Everybody's sort of going at the same time. And that makes it good for large groups. It makes it good for kids. And then it's just a bunch of cards that have pictures of animals on them. And they're Karen Lewis's arts, and they're Karen Lewis's cute animals. And one of the tricks, part of the whole point of the game is, one of the animals pictured there is a human. And you get to see that, oh, humans are sort of closely related to rodents and to rabbits. And just putting a human in that context as one more animal that's related to all the other animals, that's sort of part of the subliminal message. And then we raise enough money on Kickstarter for that game that not only do we have Clades, but we also have Clades Prehistoric, which is basically the same game, but it's prehistoric animals. So dinosaurs and pterosaurs, and sea scorpions, giant millipedes, all sorts of stuff.
Oh, I have a feeling that is going to go over very, very well with those who like the giant big bugs.
Yes, yeah. And so actually, those games are both being published right there in Minnesota by Atlas Games.
I love Minnesota.
We have such
the best game. Yeah, Minnesota's great.
You should join us, Jonathan. You should move here.
No, as somebody from Washington State, stay where you are. We're coming to you.
I've lived in Minnesota, and I'm staying in Seattle. But I love to visit the Twin Cities. Really, I had a really great visit there when I came in to work at the Science Museum of Minnesota. I had a great visit at First Unitarian Society in Minneapolis. They started as a Charles Darwin reading club like over 100 years ago, back in the 1880s or something. So they were a Charles Darwin reading club before they were a Unitarian congregation, and then they were apparently the center or the, you know, of congregational humanism. So they did a big Darwin Day event, and I read the book to the whole congregation, and it was really great.
Nice. So do you have any other evolution communication projects going on? Anything you can give us, yeah, like, well, some details?
So Science Museum of Minnesota is doing a really audacious three-part program, and they're planning on not just teaching evolution to, like, middle schoolers, but figuring out how to teach difficult topics to middle schoolers in general, or to museum goers in general. So it's very ambitious. They're going to try lots of different things. They're going to test lots of different things, have multiple kinds of activities. Seems really great. So awesome. That'll be a lot of fun. And then Clades and Clades Prehistoric have just about hit the warehouse, so they're going to be probably on store shelves early in April, maybe by the end of March. And then Karen and I have a concept for an even simpler sort of evolution-themed game for evolution-themed book for kids. So we'll see.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And if our listeners wanted to find you, where can they find you?
So Facebook and Twitter are great. I'm on Google+, but not many people are. So Facebook and Twitter, I always tell people. Grandmother Fish is there. and find out all the stuff that I'm doing in terms of evolution. And then I'm also there as Jonathan Tweet. I'm Twitter on Jonathan M as a Michael Tweet. And there's where I talk about games and politics and what have you. Those are all good.
Awesome. Is there anything else you want to share with us quick?
No, I mean, I'm really happy to talk to people in Minnesota. I think that, you know, my family all has, our relatives are there. It's sort of where my blood is from. And I grew up in Illinois, but I went to school in Minnesota and lived in Minneapolis for a while. And so, yeah, I think that, like, the Minnesota population is sort of literate. And, you know, it's just sort of reminds me a lot of the Seattle area population. And so, yeah, I think I'm hoping that my book will find a great reception there.
Well, thank you very much, Jonathan. Have a good day.
You bet. Thanks.
Hi, this is Paul Metza inviting you to listen to the Wall of Power Radio Hour every weekend on AM 950. We are now in our third year of broadcasting on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. MinPost has called us one of the 22 most independently entertaining and cool radio shows in the Twin Cities. We feature cool people from all walks of life and from all 50 states every Saturday at 6 p.m., replayed Sunday at 4 p.m. on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. Our weekly Native American talk radio show will discuss national and local Native American news and events. Local and national guests will help us keep current with Mother Earth, tribal, and Twin City issues. Native American issues are human issues. We invite all people to walk hand in hand with our struggles, victories, and achievements. Listen Saturdays at 2 p.m.
I am awake.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe. I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and France in Edina. Many who have dined at Cucumbers are of the opinion that our buffet has evolved from an older, more country-style buffet. They look at our 50-foot salad bar and can imagine a smaller ancestor with far fewer choices. An ancestor that didn't offer as many hot selections or have a bakery with fresh baked muffins and breads. Didn't offer homemade soups and lacked the fresh fruit and ice cream bar that Cucumbers customers have grown to love. But some will say, where are the transitional buffets? In addition, they look at everything that we offer and say that Cucumbers is irreducibly complex. If you were to move just one of our offerings, the entire buffet wouldn't function. Well, I would like to think that Cucumbers was intelligently designed, since I helped design it. But at the same time, it truly is an evolutionary step up the buffet ladder. And as always, if you bring in your atheist newsletter or church bulletin, you will receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
I've never met another atheist.
Sure you have. Non-believers make up 12% of the population.
Then where are they?
You can meet us at book clubs, pub crawls, discussion groups, movie nights, monthly meetings.
Okay, I get it. How am I going to keep track of all this?
Easy. Sign up for Minnesota Atheist Meetup Group and subscribe to AWE.
What's a meetup group?
Meetup is an online networking site that helps people build communities. We have over 700 members with at least two events every week.
And what is AWE?
It stands for Atheist Weekly Email. It comes out every Friday and lists everything that's going on.
How do I sign up?
Go to the Minnesota Atheists website, minnesotaatheists.org. On the left, click on the words Get Awe-Inspired.
And for the meetup?
Look for the red meetup badge on the right. Above it are the words Click Here to check out the meetup group.
I'm sold. Minnesota Atheists, Meetup, and AWE. What's that website again?
MinnesotaAtheists.org.
Hello and welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and thank you as always for joining us. This week in Alabama, the Alabama State Senate and House voted on companion bills that would require the state to vote on a ballot initiative to amend the state's constitution to ostensibly allow Ten Commandment monuments to be displayed on government owned or administered property, including public schools and public courthouses and city halls. This amendment, while claiming to allow these things, would actually not really change anything. The Alabama Constitution is currently silent on this issue, and the times that Alabama has been forced to remove Ten Commandment monuments and religious monuments from public land have been because the way that they've done it has run counter to the federal constitution. And so the mere fact that the state constitution is silent on this issue has no bearing on whether or not individuals can place Ten Commandment monuments on public land. The language on this thing is really ridiculous and really ties itself up in knots in order to try to seem like it's doing something, but at the same time being written in a way that is, I guess, trying to be constitutional. So the introduction, I just want to read a passage from this. It says, quote, "The constitutional amendment would provide that property belonging to the state may be used to display the Ten Commandments, and that the right to display the Ten Commandments on property owned or administrated by a public school or public body is not restrained or abridged." Now, the thing about that is there is no right to display the Ten Commandments on public land, and the right, quote-unquote, to do so is not abridged in any way except by the federal constitution. And if they think they're overriding the federal constitution's prohibitions on establishment of religion, we have sort of bad news for them that, you know, this matter was settled quite some time ago, I believe during a war, but I'm not a historian, so we'll have to sort of check back on that one. The other thing that's really interesting about this thing is that it says, quote, "The proposed amendment would prohibit the expenditure of public funds in defense of the constitutionality of this amendment," meaning that they're trying to insulate themselves from claims that they'd be wasting government money doing this, that this is, you know, just a show of politics, that it's all about, you know, signaling and you know, indicating their fealty to a certain type of religious belief, which it is. I mean, let's be clear about what's going on here. But they're trying to say, oh, we're not going to waste any money doing that. But clearly that's wrong. Clearly that's not accurate. They're spending money discussing this, debating this bill, and just defending state statutes requires the expenditure of state money. That's just a fact. That's how these things work. And so it's really interesting that they add in things about every person shall be at liberty to worship God according to the dictates of his or her own conscience. No person shall be compelled to attend or against his or her consent to contribute to the erection or support of any place of religious worship or to pay tithes, taxes, or other rates for the support of any minister of the gospel, while at the same time providing that state money, that the upkeep of state property is being used to administer religious monuments. Now, this isn't to say that there is an absolute prohibition on the erection of religious monuments on public land. There isn't. You just have to create what's called a limited public forum where all comers are permitted to erect similar monuments and similar displays. But that's not what they want here. This statute, as it was originally introduced, only mentions the Ten Commandments. And golly, I can't even imagine why that would be. Why would it be that in Alabama, a state that since 1992, I believe it is, has been in a near constant fight to preserve Ten Commandment monuments on public land, leading all the way back to the first time that Roy Moore did this in his courtroom, putting up the Ten Commandment display in his courtroom, with competing lawsuits being filed by the ACLU, by atheist groups, lawsuits being filed by the governor, threatening force if the displays were removed. The governor actually filed a lawsuit to protect the Ten Commandment monument. This has cost the Alabama taxpayers millions and millions of dollars and are nothing more than pandering. They think, apparently, that amending their own state constitution to explicitly allow Ten Commandment monuments will have any bearing on this debate. It doesn't. The federal constitution and the federal courts are where they've lost all these cases. It's federal courts that ordered Roy Moore to remove the Ten Commandment display from inside his courtroom, that demanded that he remove the Ten Commandment, you know, granite block from the steps of the courthouse, and that have ruled it repeatedly against isolated Ten Commandment displays on all public land. They want to go so far here, as I said, to put these in schools, to allow schools to put these things up. And this sort of blatant disregard for the norms of our Constitution, for religious freedom, and for neutrality, government neutrality, are
they're not so surprising anymore, but they're shocking to the conscience. These are things, they're wasting time on this. Just like in Florida, where they wasted time addressing gun violence by saying that schools should be putting up "In God We Trust" in every classroom, that that would solve gun violence. Just like they're doing in Arkansas, putting up, mandating that schools put up displays that say "In God We Trust." This is nothing more than just pandering to a specific type of religious person and religious voter that wants their government to be sucking up to them constantly, that apparently can't make it through the day without constant reminders from government that their religion is the preferred one, that their religion is the one preferred by the government. And that's why it's so important that we partner with not just other atheists, and not just with not just go this alone by ourselves, but also partner with other minority religious views, partner with other minority religious groups, and get this out there and raise our voices and be heard, because, you know, the majority of Americans don't want this. The majority of Americans want their government to be neutral on religious stuff. And I would venture a guess that even in places like Alabama, there are sizable majorities of people who don't want the government giving special treatment to one religion over another. These sorts of displays have no secular purpose. They represent a massive entanglement of government with religion, and they don't pass constitutional muster. And so by passing this law, all Alabama is doing is opening itself up to yet more litigation, to yet another constitutional challenge, and to an eventual loss. They're already permitted to put up the Ten Commandments if they want to, as long as they let everybody else do the exact same thing. Equality from the government is not persecution. Your view not getting special treatment and not getting elevated above everyone else isn't attacking you. It's equality. Hopefully Alabama does the right thing, and if the state legislature doesn't do the right thing, hopefully Alabama voters will do the right thing. But if not, this doesn't actually change anything, so we'll keep an eye on it as it develops. That's all the time I have for this week. Thank you, as always, for joining us. For more information about our work or to become a member, please visit www.atheists.org. Time's running out to register for our national convention, March 29th to April 1st in Oklahoma City, atheists.org/OKC. That's atheists.org/OKC. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next time.